Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole. Now, before we begin today's show, I just wanted to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcast. That helps you stay up to date on all the latest content from us, and it helps us get the word out to others and let them know that we're providing valuable information to soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Sam Snow, CEO of American Made Soccer Consultants. Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Marcus. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, some of our audience may be sitting there saying to themselves, hey, I know this name, Sam Snow. Sam has spent a long time with U.S. Youth Soccer. So, Sam, why don't you just go ahead and tell our audience a little bit more about you and your connections with soccer?
Well, the connection goes back to being on the first high school team ever in Orlando, Florida, back in the, 1970, early 70s, and then on to college soccer, and after that I got into coaching on a full-time basis. So I worked at a college called Florida Southern College, which is in Central Florida, and after that I was the state technical director for Louisiana Soccer Association for about 10 years, after which I then came to USU Soccer, where I worked for a little over 14 years as the technical director, focusing on coaching education, top soccer, the Olympic development program, all the things that had some connection with the player experience and the coaching education.
Awesome. Now, today what I want to do, Sam, is I want to focus on an area that I think that we need to focus on a little bit more, and that's our grassroots level. Of course, here in West Virginia, as I'm sure in most states, that's the biggest population of soccer players that we have are at this grassroots or rec level. Now, we're getting ready for our upcoming spring season, probably starting up here in the next month or so, and I want to talk to the grassroots coaches out there. First question I have for you is, what should be the first step for a new grassroots coach to prepare for the upcoming season? Now, I mean, you know, you get some coaches that are got a little bit of experience, maybe played a little bit when they were younger, or you get a coach that's brand spanking new that doesn't know a whole lot about the sport. What should that first step be for them?
I think the first step is to take a step back and get a little bit bigger perspective as to what the coach is hoping the whole experience of the season will be, both for the coach and for the players, the parents of the players, et cetera. You know, most coaches, as an example, go into a match with some kind of a game plan as to what they would like to see the team try to execute for that day, but not enough coaches fundamentally have a game plan for the season. They tend to sometimes just go from practice to practice, game to game, and not really thinking, a few weeks down the road or a couple months down the road. So for me, Marcus, that would be the first thing, is to take a step back, take a look at what would we like to have accomplished during the course of the season, where would we like to try to end up. And that begins to give the coach a little bit of a roadmap, a little bit of an idea as to what he or she needs then to put into the training sessions, how they're going to manage matches, how they're going to communicate with parents and players, is basically having a good game plan, a good business plan, a good curriculum.
So what should they be thinking about as far as that plan? I mean, what different areas should they be looking at? Because I know sometimes we get into a situation where maybe we overexpect from our teams, especially at the younger ages. You know, I mean, we got to remember in the end, these are children. They're not professional players. What should they be thinking about?
It's going to vary a good deal on the age group and the level of competition, the level of play. So if you're intramural, if you will, in-house, so that's most likely to occur with the 6 and under, 8 and under, maybe with the 10 and under age groups, where you're playing predominantly, if not exclusively, other teams in your club, in your organization. You're not really traveling yet to other towns or other clubs to play. So there, I think the big objective is at the end of the season, I've given all the kids a well-rounded exposure, experience to playing the game of soccer. Part of that, as an example, being, have I given the kids a chance to play all the different positions on the team? Have I helped them to improve in their understanding of fair play, of the rules of the sport? Have I helped them to improve their ball skills, those sort of things? And then, you know, at the end of that, you begin to get a little bit into, well, how did we perform? But that's actually at the end. Kids, younger kids, focus more on the process of playing, the enjoyment of playing, than they do necessarily on the outcome. So I think the coach needs to understand that, and then he or she can be better prepared to focus on the process of playing the game and teaching the kids how to play the sport. When you get to the slightly older kids, and if there's a bit more of a level of play where we are trying to play for some end results, then I got to take a look at not only the process of play, that's still actually the core piece, is learning how to play the game intelligently and skillfully. But then I also have to help the players on setting some realistic goals, you know, to say, well, you know, we want to win the state championship and go on to regionals or something like that. That's great, but that's sometimes out of your direct control. So what are the things that the team has under direct control? Well, we have our own attitude, our own team culture that's under our control, those sort of things. And then hopefully if we perform well, we begin to get results.
Now, you mentioned
much of it depends on that age and level of play.
Right. Now, you mentioned being prepared. How important is it for a coach to prepare for their practices before they get to the field?
You know, it's perhaps one of the most important pieces of being a team coach is preparing for the training sessions and for the games. It probably comes only after being a good communicator. I put that at the top of the list for good coaches, communicating well with the players, the parents of the players, other coaches, et cetera. But big piece for the coach in being prepared is to go into each training session with a plan. Don't think that you're going to get there and stand on the middle of the field. Practice has already begun, and then you're trying to figure out what to do. You know, that's actually not giving the players your best, and then coaches turn around and want players to give their best on game day. Coaches need to give their best on practice day, on training day. So a big piece of that is put together a lesson plan. You can go to your state association website. You can go to the USU Soccer website. You can go to the US Soccer website. All of those have lesson plans, training session plans that coaches can download, in most cases, for free. So there's a good place to start to be able to get some ideas as to what you want to do in each of your training sessions.
Now, what should coaches be keeping in mind when they plan these practices with these kids? What are some fundamentals that they should keep in mind?
I think the first part is learning how to cooperate as well as how to compete. So it's an emotional, psychological piece. Everybody thinks that the very first piece is technique, is ball skills. And part of the reason for thinking that way is it's more obvious. It's hard sometimes to see the attitude of a player, the mentality of a player. It's easier to see the physical dimensions of the things that the player does with the ball, the athleticism of a player. It's harder to see the psychological, tactical pieces of a player because that starts in the brain and then, you know, comes out in some form out on the field. So I think one of the most important pieces to begin to try to build within the team is, in addition to a good rapport of the coach with the players and the players among themselves, is learning how to cooperate with each other. That's a big psychological, emotional component of becoming a team. You know, one of the things that most adults, be they the parents of the kids, the coaches, whomever, are thinking about in terms of what they want children to get out of sports is teamwork. You hear that a lot from particularly moms and dads. I want my kid to learn teamwork, meaning I want them to learn how to work with others. Well, obviously, a big piece of that is how to cooperate with others. And when you're very young, that's a new lesson. That's something you're still evolving into, learning how to cooperate and communicate with your teammates. And then the next piece is, you know, how to compete. And with that, what we're really getting about is more the psychological piece, the emotional piece of persistence, perseverance. Can I give it my all? Do I try my best? Can I walk off the field at the end of a game, no matter what the score was, and say, I tried my best throughout the whole game? It's learning some of those lessons, which are actually quite difficult. It takes time. It takes a lot of experience and guidance from the coach in the training sessions and the matches. But those are not only soccer lessons, but life lessons. And I think that's also a big part of what most moms and dads want for their kids out of the sports experience, is learning a few, or reinforcing a few life lessons as well as the sport itself.
Now, you mentioned, you know, the psychological and the emotional levels and experiences for these children. As grassroots coaches, especially for these younger kids, what ideals can we keep in mind, or what should we keep in mind of the expectations that we should have for these kids during practices and their level of engagement?
I think the expectations by the coach and the other adults with the team need to be managed in the sense that the adults need to remember that the kids are not looking at sport the way that the adults do. The adults tend to look at sport, I call it the sports center syndrome. You know, the sports center is all about reporting about what happened in the game and how players performed and maybe how coaches performed and that such. But I talk to coaches and parents all the time. I said, well, when was the last time you saw the coach of the local 9-year-old team being interviewed on SportsCenter? You know, it's always with adult teams, either professional teams, it's those people's full-time jobs as adults, or it's with college teams, and that's pretty darn close to their full-time job as young adults. Whereas in this context, we're talking about working with children and working with young teenagers, and the expectations have to be different in terms of what the kids are expecting out of the sport. Is not always about the one loss record, the goals for, goals against. And you're still striving. You should be striving to try to do your best in that realm, but it's not solely about that piece. So I think the coaches need to be thinking about that part as they go in and work with the younger kids in terms of expectations. And then with the youngest players in particular, the coaches need to recognize that it's going to be trial and error. It's going to be a lot of mistakes as they go along learning how to play the game. You can't learn how to play a sport without making mistakes. That's part of the process of improving. You have to go through mistakes in order to get better. You have to go through some games lost as well as won and tied in order to get better. Excuse me. So I think coaches need to have that expectation of looking at it and thinking, well, we worked on passing in our training session. Well, as the kids learn passing in games, they're going to make mistakes. Even professional players make mistakes in their passing. So the coaches have to have that realistic level of expectation.
Now, parents obviously are a big component with our grassroots level as far as the team. What role can parents have with the team, and how should coaches be getting them involved?
I think it's very important for coaches to have a good working relationship with the parents. And I know that in some instances, coaches shy away from interacting with, communicating with the parents. And I ask them to try to put themselves in the parents' shoes. And as a parent, you want to know a little bit about what's going on with your kid, whether it be the school experience, the soccer experience, or other things, that the activities the kid's involved in. So I ask coaches to spend 5 minutes at every single training session and every match talking to the parents. And I tell them some days it's just housekeeping items. You know, hey, practice has been moved from field 3 to field 8 because they're putting, you know, fertilizer on our field. Other times it's, here's a little bit of the madness behind the method. Here's what it is that we're working on. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. And then for the parents, recognizing too that it's got to be a two-way street. The parents have got to do their part in terms of communicating clearly and early with the coach. And an example being that I know that drives a lot of coaches crazy is a kid doesn't show up for practice or shows up late, and the coach had no heads up from the parents or from the kid that that was going to happen. And coaches, if they are doing a good job of planning for training sessions, then they plan for X number of players to be participating in the training session. And then a player is a no-show, two players are no-shows, three players are no-shows, or show up late. That really wrecks the training session plan for the coach. So the communication needs to be two ways, between the parents to the coach and the coach to the parents. Then there's a few more things that parents can do to help with their own child's soccer experience and the rest of the team and the child's interaction with new teammates and probably some new friends within the team. And one of those, of course, is managing your emotions and managing yourself on game day. That can be a challenge. We all get caught up in the emotions of a game. We especially get caught up in our own child's actions, performance within a game. But it's important to understand that the soccer experience is the kid's experience. It's not going on for the sake of the adult. It's going on for the sake of the kids. So the parents, and even to an extent the coaches, need to recognize that we are essentially spectators of the kids' games, that we need to set the right example by our words and, most importantly, by our actions. So bite your tongue when you need to. Step on your own toes when you need to keep yourself managed during the game and setting the right example in front of all of the kids, not just your kid, because whether you're interacting or think you're interacting only with your child, every other kid out on the field, your team, the other team, the teams on the fields next to you, they're all picking up on what's going on with the adults. So that's a big, big piece, obviously, is being a good spectator at children's games. And then I think off the field, there's a couple of parts that moms and dads can play that will help the individual child, individual player, become a better athlete, become a better soccer player. And that's helping the kids get into good off-the-field habits. So some examples of good off-the-field habits. Sleep hygiene, which is rarely talked about. Are you teaching your kid going to bed at a regular time, getting up at a regular time, getting a proper night's sleep before a game, before a training session? That actually has a direct influence upon performance as an athlete. This is the science behind this is getting deeper and more well-known. And if you look at some of the top professional teams and college teams around the country and around the world, you'll see that they actually monitor the sleeping. They have monitors on the players to monitor their sleep habits and this sort of thing and how it affects their athletic performance. So just beginning to teach the kids good sleep habits. And then one that's a little bit more obvious is nutrition. Moms and dads are obviously in charge of the nutrition that their kid gets. The coach has little direct influence over that, other than maybe the coach giving the parents some nutrition guidelines. And there's certainly, you can go to a number of different sports nutritionists to get good information on what kids and teenagers should be eating to improve their athletic performance. So helping the kids get into the lifestyle of an athlete is one of the big pieces that parents can do off the field to help the kids on the field.
I agree. Something and an area that's probably overlooked a lot too. one thing too, in regards to expectations with coaches and with parents, is sometimes, unfortunately, we focus too much on winning at this level. What can coaches do in regards to themselves as well as their parents to avoid this pitfall?
It's a very important point, Marcus, that you brought up, and it's this balancing act back and forth between player development and outcome, one-loss record. And it really shouldn't need to be an area of consternation as it is with a lot of folks. Some of it stems back to, once again, that sports center mentality, you know, just what was the result of the game in terms of who won and who lost and what was the score. Those of us that have played soccer, refereed soccer, coached soccer, know that the score doesn't always indicate how the game was played, number one. It's not always the best indicator of how a team or individual players have performed. And we also know from playing our sport that it's perhaps one of the cruelest sports in the sense that it's one of those games where you can outshoot the opposition and still lose.
Yep.
So if you're in a basketball game and you outshoot the opposition 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, I mean, it's a done deal. I've been in games, coached games, where we've outshot the opposition 2-1, 3-1, kind of a ratio, and still lose the game.
You lose that one counterattack.
Exactly. They get that one counterattack. You're down there knocking balls off of their goalpost, and they get that one counterattack and, you know, kind of steal the game, so to speak. So there's that piece that everybody has to keep in mind, is that that's just the unpredictable nature of soccer. It's one of the things that we love about playing the sport, but it's also one of the things that can drive you mad, because there's that factor that just because you're playing better than the opposition doesn't automatically mean that you're going to win that game. So the one loss record, the goals for all of those sort of things, that's all well and fine, but it's a little superficial. It doesn't always tell you how the team or the individual is performing. So everybody's got to keep in mind that while we always want to teach kids and put players out on the field with the idea of try your best, strive to win, leave it all out on the field as the saying goes. But just because you do that doesn't guarantee a win. It probably tilts things heavily in your favor, but there are no guarantees. You, as we just discussed, it's the other team gets that one breakaway, and you know, you end up losing the game even though you tried your best throughout the entire game. And that's another one of those sports lessons and life lessons wrapped into one. So everybody's got to realize that we always want to try to win, but we don't have to win. It's a game of, you know, with 10-year-olds playing the game or 14-year-olds playing the game or what have you. Our discussions among the national coaching educators is really there's really only two teams that have to win, and they don't win every time. These two teams that have to win, the full men's national team, the full women's national team. Yes, so there's a lot of professional coaches that are going to argue, wait a minute.
Right.
My professional team has to win. Okay, fair point. But, you know, particularly at the youth level, it's more about developing the players and learning how to play the game skillfully and intelligently. And if you do that, then you're going to get your fair share of wins.
Yep. 100%. Coaching education. Let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, I mean, I've gone through some of the courses over the years and stuff, and I found it just extremely beneficial, just not only for my personal development, but also the way I approach things with my players. Talk to us a little bit about the importance for coaches to get some sort of certification, you know, whether it's U.S. Soccer, whether it's United Soccer Coaches or whatever.
I, of course, think that it's really important. I'm fully engaged in that aspect of our sport. I think for coaches, one, it's a little bit of an obligation to the players. Even if you were voluntold, as opposed to volunteered, to be the coach, once you're in that position, go ahead and make that commitment that, you know what, I'm going to do a number of things to prepare myself, educate myself, so I can step out there and do the best I can. And some coaches think, well, I'm only going to do this for a season because I was kind of the last-minute person that they, you know, kind of strong-armed into becoming the coach, or I'm only going to do it for a year, or, you know, then I'm out. And sometimes that's true, but often coaches end up staying longer. But even if you're there only for a season, to say, you know what, I'm going to go online. I'm going to take an online course that's going to take me an hour to do on the Internet. That has a minimum level of certification. Should be an expectation of all coaches. I think parents should put a little bit more pressure on soccer organizations at every level, that every coach, every single coach, should have some minimum certification as at least a base point. So again, that can be an online course that they do with U.S. Soccer. It could be an online course that the coach does with the United Soccer Coaches. Those are the two best places for coaches to go to begin their formal coaching education, taking some online courses. In the end, the online part is good, but the in-person part is even better, because you get a chance with the in-person part to actually get out on the field, do a little bit of coaching, get a little bit of feedback, interact with other coaches in the course, interact with the instructors who are experienced, qualified coaches. And you can learn a lot online, but you can learn much, much more in person. So the beginning level courses are in-person courses are 4 hours long. So it sounds like it's a fairly decent time commitment, but if you step back and think about, well, what is it that I'm asking from the kids in terms of show up for practice by yourself back home, show up for the games, make all of this commitment to learn how to play the sport, then shouldn't I, as their coach, invest, you know, an hour or two online, 4 hours in person to give myself some minimum certification? And then I think most coaches, once they do that, actually feel empowered from the whole experience. They now go into their interactions with their team better prepared, with a better idea as to what they're doing and how they can have this positive impact on teaching the game of soccer to the children. So
I think it's also to a level of excitement that you can have.
Expectations. I'm sorry, say again.
I said it's also to a level of excitement that you can bring back to your practice sessions. I always remember being so excited to go back, and I can't wait to show these guys this, you know, what I learned here, and I want to see how this plays out with my team and stuff like that.
It takes the coach out of fumbling in the dark to having some ideas to at least where the light switch is, you know, to be able to then put light on the whole process of being a coach and teaching the kids a bit about how to play the game of soccer. And whether you are an ex-player or you've never played the game before, every single coach needs to go through some formal coaching education. How far they go with that certainly is a personal decision in the end, unless, of course, you get to a level play where there are requirements of certain levels of coaching license in order to coach in a league. But we also have a group of coaches out there nowadays that are former players, and a lot of them do go to the coaching education courses automatically. It's just kind of a part of the soccer culture. And then there's a few that think, oh, I grew up playing the game. I know all about it. I don't need to go to a coaching course. And coaching is a whole different skill set than playing the sport.
Yes.
Being a player and being a coach requires two distinct skill sets. So if you're a former player who has now become a coach, do yourself and the kids a favor and put yourself into a coaching course.
Now, Sam, before we wrap things up, if you were to give just one simple piece of advice to new grassroots coaches as they get ready for this upcoming season, what would that one piece of advice be?
Relax, have fun, let the kids be kids, let them play, and go out and try to be the right example, be the right role model in the things that you do and the things that you say in front of the kids.
I think that's a great piece of advice. Now, Sam, before we wrap things up here, why don't you tell our audience a little bit? You're the CEO of American Made Soccer Consultants. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
So what I am able to do is, through my 40 years of experience coaching and being an administrator in the sport, I've made a lot of connections, be it people in finance, in sports medicine, in governance, facilities development, et cetera. So basically, American Made Soccer Consultants is an agency where a club, any soccer organization, identifies some needs, contact me, and we can put you together with the right people. And we're putting you together with the right people who not only perhaps have a professional qualifications, credentials in one field, but they're also soccer people. They're former soccer coaches, licensed, they're former referees, they're all former players, so they speak the sport. They speak your language when it comes to soccer. The example I give is a few of my colleagues are by profession financial advisors. But they're also, like I said, former coaches, licensed coaches, former players. So let's say a soccer club says, we want to expand our business plan so that we can hire another one or two employees within the club, or we want to expand our facilities. Well, there has to be a financial plan to be able to make all of that happen. So maybe a financial advisor is part of what the club now needs, but we'll put you together with somebody who understands the club environment, understands the game of soccer and what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So whether it be sports nutrition, governance of your organization, you name it, we can connect you with the right people.
And where can people find you guys online?
You can find us at American Made Soccer Consultants online, U.S. Soccer Consultants online, and also just contact me if people like at my email address, which is sam.snow@ussoccerconsultants.com. ussoccerconsultants.com is the website and the email address.
Wonderful. Sam, I certainly appreciate your time today and you coming on the program to talk to us a little bit about coaching and grassroots soccer. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you've heard our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode, so we hope to see you next week. Take care.